A wonderful bird is the pelican. His bill will hold more than his bellican. He can take in his beak enough food for a week, but I'm damned if I know how the hell he can. Now that limerick is often misattributed to the poet Ogden Nash, and to be fair, if you know Ogden Nash's poetry, it does sound a lot like his work. But no, no, dear listener, it was penned in 1910 by a man named Dixon Merritt, an American poet, newspaper editor, and humorist, inspired by a postcard someone sent him from Florida. Now, when I was growing up, my dad would recite this to me anytime the subject of pelicans came up. In fact, he probably still will if I give him the chance. My best guess is that he heard it from his own father, although I don't think he could tell you who wrote it. And now it's so ingrained in me that I can't help but think of it whenever the subject of pelicans comes up in my own life. And it just so happens that the subject came up just this last week when a small flock of American white pelicans showed up on a pair of small lakes that I happened to pass by several times a day, pretty much every day. So let's learn more about this wonderful bird whose bill can hold more than his bellican, the pelican. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, and this is the Dispatches from the Forest podcast. Now, if I asked you where to find a pelican, you'd probably think about coastal areas, places like California and Florida. Wyoming probably wouldn't be high on your list, and yet, here they are, American white pelicans, 15 to 20 of them swimming around like nobody's business. It's hard to mistake these pelicans for any other bird. Along with the trumpeter swan, American white pelicans are one of the longest birds in North America, ranging from 4 to nearly 6 feet, which includes that big, long orange beak that measures 11 to 15 inches in males and 10 to 14 inches in females. Their wingspan is equally as impressive, 8 to 10 feet. As far as North American birds go, that's second only to the California condor. Their feathers, as their name suggests, are white, except for black on their wings that's only visible from below when they're flying. Like I said, they're pretty unmistakable. They also have a long neck and short, stout legs with large, fully webbed feet. The average weight for an American white pelican is between 11 and 20 pounds. Now, pelicans are up there among the heaviest flying birds, but that said, they're actually lighter than they look. Pelicans have a network of air sacs under their skin and in their bones. These air sacs are actually connected to the respiratory system, and a pelican can keep its air sacs inflated by closing its glottis. The air sacs make pelicans remarkably buoyant in the water and might also cushion the impact of the pelican's body on the surface of the water when they dive from the air to catch fish, as a couple of species do. More on that later. The presence of these air sacs also rounds the body contours, especially over the abdomen, helping the overlying feathers form more effective insulation and also helping keep the feathers in a better aerodynamic position when flying. American white pelicans nest in colonies that can range from several hundred pairs up to 5,000 pairs, either on islands or in remote lakes or shallow wetlands of inland North America. And it turns out that this area, the southeast corner of Wyoming, is one of the places that American white pelicans come to breed. Who knew? They arrive on the breeding grounds in March or April, and nesting starts between early April and early June. I can only hope that the ones I saw plan to stick around so that I can see pelican chicks. That would be awesome. During the breeding season, both males and females developed a pronounced horn on the top of their large flat beak, about a third of the way behind the tip. American white pelicans are the only one of the world's 8 species of pelican that grow this bill horn. And in fact, all the pelicans I saw were sporting this growth. Now, apparently these horns are just eye candy, a little bedazzling of the beak, only useful for attracting a mate. The horn is shed after they've mated and laid their eggs. An American white pelican nest is just a shallow depression scraped in the ground, into which they throw some twigs or sticks or reeds or other debris that they've gathered. After a week or so of courtship and nest building, the female lays a clutch of 2 or 3 eggs on average, although it can be as few as 1 or as many as 6. Both parents help incubate the eggs, which hatch in about a month. Chicks are naked at first, then grow white down feathers all over. Like cranes, which I talked about a few episodes ago, usually only one chick per clutch survives, and it will leave the nest 3 to 4 weeks after hatching. They spend the next month in what's called a creche or a pod, being cared for as a group by multiple females. During this time, they'll molt into their immature plumage and they'll learn to fly. After fledging, the parents care for their young for another 3 weeks or so until the late summer or early fall. At this time, they'll gather in larger groups on rich feeding grounds to get ready for the migration to the wintering grounds. By September or October, they're on their way south. American white pelicans spend the winter on the Pacific and Gulf coasts from central California and Florida south to Costa Rica. During the winter, they're rarely found on the open seashore, preferring estuaries, bays, and lakes. Interestingly, given that they're a water bird, during migration, they'll happily cross deserts and mountains, but avoid the open ocean. Lifespan in the wild for American white pelicans averages about 16 years. But let's come back to that beak. Can the pelican really take in its beak enough food for a week? Well, maybe not that much, but it's still pretty remarkable. American white pelicans, unsurprisingly, eat mostly fish, ranging in size anywhere from minnows up to about 3.5 pounds. They're also known to eat crayfish, amphibians, and even turtles, birds, and small mammals. They feed by swimming on the surface, dipping their bills in the water and scooping water and fish into their bill pouch. The pouch can hold up to 3 gallons of water at a time. The water drains out, and the food is swallowed whole. Pelicans have a very small tongue, so it doesn't get in the way. During the breeding season, American white pelicans often forage at night, locating prey by touch with frequent dipping of the bill. During the day, it locates prey primarily by sight. American white pelicans are also known to work cooperatively to hunt, lining up and driving prey into shallower water. They're also not above stealing food from other birds, including other pelicans, gulls, and cormorants. Hey, bald eagles do it too, so don't judge. American white pelicans need to eat about 4 pounds of food per day. And the bill pouch is good for more than just catching dinner. Pelicans use their bill pouch to maintain their body temperatures. They release heat by facing away from the sun and fluttering their bill pouches, which have a lot of blood vessels in them. Incubating parents may also stretch their wings to cool themselves. Now, pelicans are particularly vulnerable to disturbance, especially by humans. Human presence alone can cause them to accidentally displace or destroy eggs, leave hatchlings exposed to predators or adverse weather, and even abandon their colonies completely. And while eggs and chicks are preyed on by a number of other animals, full-grown pelicans have very few predators. Only red foxes and coyotes are known to prey on nesting adults, and even then, only on rare occasions. But pelicans react to mammalian threats differently from avian threats. For example, white pelicans may temporarily abandon their nest if a human comes too close, but if the threat is another bird, the pelican is more likely to stay and fight off the interloper by jabbing at them with their large bill. Now, pelicans have been persecuted by humans for a long time because of a perceived competition for fish, despite the fact that their diet has very little overlap with the species of fish that we people seek out. Starting in the 1880s, American white pelicans were clubbed and shot, their eggs and young were deliberately destroyed, and their feeding and nesting grounds were degraded by water management schemes and wetland drainage. Even more recently, an increased population of American white pelicans in southeastern Idaho were seen as a threat to the recreational cutthroat trout fishery, leading to official attempts to reduce pelican numbers through systematic harassing and culling. So now let's look at North America's other pelican species, the brown pelican. While these pelicans do occasionally show up in Wyoming, it's a much rarer occurrence, since brown pelicans are generally more restricted to coastal areas. Brown pelicans are found on the Atlantic, Gulf, and Pacific coasts of North and South America. On the Atlantic coast, they're found from New Jersey to the mouth of the Amazon River. On the Pacific coast, they range from British Columbia to northern Peru, including the Galapagos Islands. But from time to time, one gets lost or blown off course by a hurricane or El Nino. Or, I don't know, maybe it just needs a little time away in the mountains, and they show up someplace far from the coast and outside of their normal range, like, say, Wyoming. Brown pelicans also generally avoid the open ocean and rarely venture more than 20 miles out to sea. Okay, now guess what color brown pelicans are. I'll give you a hint. There's a significant amount of brown. But in their breeding plumage, they do have a white head with a yellowish crown. And the brown is streaked with other colors, like silver, gray, and black. Brown pelicans are the smallest of the eight species, even though they're still one of the largest seabirds in their range. Brown pelicans are 3 to 5 feet long, including 11 to 14 inches of bill, and have a wingspan that averages 7 to 7.5 feet. They weigh in at 7 to 8 pounds, so about half of what the other two pelican species on this side of the globe weigh, the Peruvian pelican and the American white pelican. Like all pelicans, brown pelicans are piscivorous. They eat mainly fish. A species called menhaden can account for up to 90% of the brown pelican's diet in some areas, although anchovy and sardine abundance have also been correlated with brown pelican nesting success. In Southern California, brown pelicans rely heavily on Pacific sardines, which can compose up to a quarter of their diet, making the pelican one of the top three predators of sardines in that area. Brown pelicans are also known to eat crustaceans, particularly prawns, amphibians, and the eggs and nesting of other birds, including other brown pelicans. Brown pelicans, and in fact all pelicans and many other seabirds and even sea turtles, are capable of drinking salt water with no ill effects. They can do this because they have a special gland called the supraorbital gland, or more simply, the salt gland. This gland filters the excess salt out of their bloodstream. The resulting salty brine is then expelled through the beak or nasal passages, sometimes making it look like the bird has a runny nose. Now, even though their diet is similar to that of American white pelicans, their feeding strategy is significantly different. Brown pelicans fly above the water, usually no more than 60 to 70 feet up, which lets them spot schools of fish. Then they dive in, bill first, often submerging completely as they snap up their prey. Narrow nasal passages keep water out of the nostrils. After surfacing, they spill the water from their throat pouch before swallowing their catch. The only other pelican species that forages primarily by diving is the closely related Peruvian pelican, but they don't dive from as high up. Now, brown pelicans are not as migratory as American white pelicans. Like I mentioned earlier, they tend to stick near the coast. But let me go into a slight tangent and talk about pelican flight for a minute. A pelican's large wingspan makes it easy for them to soar and glide. Fibrous tissues in the breast muscles help them hold their wings rigidly horizontal, and using thermals, they can reach altitudes of up to 10,000 feet. Sometimes flying in a V formation, they'll commute nearly 100 miles to reach a good feeding area. Pelicans also fly low over the water, a behavior known as skimming, to take advantage of an aerodynamic phenomenon known as ground effect. Now, I'm not going to get into the physics of it all, but basically a bird or even a plane and, I don't know, maybe even Superman, I suppose, flying over a fixed surface like the ground or water has decreased drag and increased lift. Brown pelicans, like all pelicans, don't mate for life, but they are monogamous in the breeding season. Brown pelican nesting peaks during March and April. The male chooses a nesting site and performs a display of head movements to attract a female. If he's successful, major courtship displays involving head swaying, bowing, turning, and standing upright are performed at the proposed nest site by both sexes. These displays might be accompanied by some low vocalizations. Once a pair forms a bond, overt communication between them becomes minimal. And I mean, just like that, they're an old married couple. Pelicans are colonial, nesting in large flocks. Chicks are very vocal when begging for food, and adults do make some guttural sounds. And the noise made by a large flock of nesting brown pelicans is not what you would describe as tranquil. Brown pelicans nest in secluded areas, often on islands, vegetated spots in sand dunes, thickets of shrubs and trees, and in mangroves. Sometimes they nest on cliffs. Nests are built by the female from reeds, leaves, pebbles, and sticks, and consist of a feather-lined depression protected with a rim of soil and debris that can be nearly 10 inches tall. Clutch size averages 2 to 3 eggs. Now, usually only one brood per year is raised, but unlike American white pelicans that have to travel a distance to their breeding grounds, brown pelicans, who are largely sedentary, have the option to try again if the eggs are lost early in the breeding season. But, like their cousins, both sexes help incubate the eggs, holding them on or under their webbed feet. Incubation takes about a month, and fledging takes another 2, although the chicks will start to leave the nest on foot before then. Now, it pays to hatch first. Fledging success is highest for the first chick hatched, often near 100%. That drops to 60% for the second hatched, and just 6% for the third. After fledging, juveniles will gather together in a pod, but they'll continue to receive parental care, and by parental care I mean regurgitated food, for a total of 8 to 10 months. Young reach sexual maturity and full adult plumage at the age of 3 to 5 years. Now, American white pelicans have been persecuted, but brown pelicans have faced complete extirpation not once, but twice. The first time was in the late 1800s, when the bird plume trade demanded large numbers of feathers for the fashion industry. The U.S. National Wildlife Refuge System was established in 1903, partly to help protect brown pelicans and other water birds from plume hunters. The Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 also protected many bird species, including brown pelicans. But then, just over a decade or two later, came DDT. Brown pelicans are one of the many species that were seriously impacted by DDT use in the early 20th century. Starting in the 1940s, the brown pelican population declined drastically due to a lack of breeding success. By the 1960s, it had almost disappeared along the Gulf Coast and in Southern California. It suffered almost total reproductive failure. It was declared locally extinct in Louisiana in 1963. The brown pelican was placed on the endangered species list in 1970, and DDT use was banned in 1972. Between 1968 and 1980, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries reintroduced the brown pelican and improved reproductive success and recolonization restored populations in California and Texas. By 1985, brown pelican population in the eastern United States and northward along the Atlantic coast had recovered enough that it was removed from the endangered species list, at least in that region. Pacific Coast and Gulf Coast populations remained endangered until at least 2009, and in 2010, brown pelicans were seriously impacted by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. But overall, the population has grown by about 68% per decade over 4 decades in North America, and this trend appears, for the most part, to be continuing. But they're not out of the proverbial woods yet. For example, brown pelicans in Southern California have been faced with diminishing food resources. While it's normal for certain fish populations to fluctuate, Pacific sardine populations have been declining since 2014. In fact, in 2019, it was determined that the Pacific sardine population had declined by 90% from their peak abundance. This significant decrease in Pacific sardine population can be linked to nitrogen levels in their habitat, which is a limiting factor in plankton production. Pacific sardines in the California current system rely on wind-driven upwelling to push cooler, nitrogen-rich waters towards the surface to maintain a sustainable, nutrient-rich environment. Environmental disruptions like El Niño, rising ocean temperatures, and increased commercial fishing have drastic impacts on the nutrient cycling, leading to lasting effects on Pacific sardine productivity and reproductive success, which in turn has an impact on brown pelicans. Brown pelicans are highly vulnerable to declining sardine populations. At the lowest level of sardine abundance, brown pelican populations are predicted to decline up to 50%. Even at a 50% decline in relative sardine abundance, Brown pelicans are predicted to decrease by up to 27%. And real-world data bear these predictions out. A recent decline in brown pelican breeding success coincides with the population decline of the Pacific sardine. But on the upside, if DDT has taught us anything, it's that if we take action on a problem, we can make a difference. And on that note, we'll end another episode. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed learning about pelicans. I'm actually thinking of doing something in between these regular podcasts, something like a roundup of what I've observed during the week or what nature-related activities I've been up to. It would be shorter, less in-depth, more informal. The idea was actually inspired by seeing the pelicans, and when I went to take some pictures of them, seeing a coyote and western thatching ants and a dead pronghorn. So drop me an email or a comment and let me know what you think. Would you listen to that too? I'm also open to name ideas. This is the Dispatches from the Forest podcast. That would be something different. I was thinking dirt dispatches. Give me your thoughts. I'd love to hear them. You can reach me at dispatchesfromtheforest@gmail.com. You can also make a donation by PayPal if you want to do that at the same address. You can support the podcast by becoming a patron and get all of the pertinent poop on patronage at patreon.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. And of course, we have merch. Check out our merch store at cafepress.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, reminding you to go outside and get dirty. The Dispatches from the Forest podcast is a production of Dispatches from the Forest and may not be used or rebroadcast whole or in part without express written permission.